Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Cubbins.
My name is Kathleen McGowan.
And our special guest today is Beth Tiger. Beth is a life coach who has written a new book about flying solo, but specifically how to rise from the ashes of divorce. And really, we are being challenged, I think, in so many ways. And whenever I think of Beth's book, what comes to mind is that old Greek adage, which is know thyself or to thy own self be true. And I think what Beth has really done is made this up to date to the 21st century. And she has done this in a book, but there is so much more to Beth that we really had to get her onto our show. So Beth, first of all, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with both of you.
So Beth, where did you begin? I mean, I assume the obvious thing is that you went through this yourself.
I did. I went through a very scary, painful divorce. I had little babies and I had to move out and I went through the process. But going through the process changed my life. I worked with an amazing coach. I was introduced to coaching itself and I really deepened my faith practice. And my life transformed. And because of that, I felt inspired to encourage and empower other people to go through their divorce experience and life after divorce in a different way. Because there is a different way to do it.
Well, as you know, the divorce statistics in the United States of America are enormous. You probably know what they are. I'm not sure, but I know it's over 50% of marriages in this country end in divorce. So certainly what you are doing is applicable to about half of our population. And as someone who has been through a divorce myself in the last couple of years, it is, I think that it is a challenge in our lives that I think is unparalleled. I don't think there's anything like it. And I don't think that anything initially can prepare you for all of the emotions that happen through divorce. And it's this explosion, not just in your life, but in the life of everyone in your family. It is, it's a death. There are all these different aspects of it that have to be dealt with. And certainly, I have witnessed the majority of my friends have gone through them. And more often than not, it's such a destructive experience. So when I read your book, I was completely blown away by it. Your book is so exceptional in the way that it approaches this process and the way that it gives hope, first and foremost, but also because it has these incredibly simple, practical steps that make you kind of step back and say, here's how I'm going to deal with this in the moment. How did you come to these amazing steps? I mean, when you were first going through your divorce, you didn't have this process, right? You had to fall like the rest of us when you were first going through this.
Yeah, I like to call it getting shoved off the Grand Canyon and landing in the face. Yeah, I went through a really horrendous time. And how I came to these principles is I went to a church and I offered my coaching services because I had come through my divorce and I thought I wanted to be of service and empower other divorcees, but I didn't really know how. I knew that I wanted to share things like forgiveness and gratitude. But I was challenged to create an 8-week program there for free, to do it as a ministry there. And I said, oh, sure, I'll do it. And then I realized I had to come up with 16 hours of material because it was 2 hours a week. And through a lot of prayer and soul searching, through the use of many books and A Course in Miracles and a lot of the things that I had been applying in my life, I developed this program. And that's really where it came out of. It was almost by accident in a way. And it's something that I use to this day. When I teach the work, when I facilitate groups, I go, oh, I need to work on forgiveness or I need to work on this principle, even many years later and being remarried.
Well, and one of the things that's really clear to me in reading the book is that it is inspired, so it doesn't surprise me to hear that that's how you created it, because there is an element to it that feels completely inspired. And I think, you know, one of the things I said when I first read it was, you can throw away all the other self-help books on your shelf. This is the only one that you need, because I can also feel that distillation of material. It's kind of like you did us all this great favor by going out and trying all these other processes and learning what worked and what didn't, and ultimately boiling it down into something where you then instilled your own methods and your own sort of realizations and insights and inspirations and created this extraordinary process. And it is absolutely inspired.
Well, thank you. I, you know what? I do feel like I'm a messenger. I feel like there's one truth anyway. So when I do the work, I do feel like it's coming through me, that we all have this beautiful divinity inside of us. And so through the process, my hope is to awaken that in each person. Because if you fall in love with yourself and you really love who you are and you love your life, it's a much easier time, or it's a much, you're in a much better place to get over the loss of a relationship, whether it's marriage or a friendship or anything else. So,
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you, because I want to get into the process, and specifically, I ultimately want to get into this whole process of losing the story, because that's the piece that just rocked my world, and I think that everyone should have to kind of practice this losing the story idea. But before we get to that, I want to touch on what you just said, which was this idea of loving yourself, because this book is called Rising from the Ashes of Divorce, but it's a series that you were creating called Flying Solo. So let's go back to this idea of flying solo for a minute and talk about what that really means for you and why you created it with that title.
Well, I created a solo series because I found for myself personally, and I have found through my coaching, that so many people run into relationships because they want a life, because they want to be fulfilled. But you cannot have a fulfilling relationship unless you are in a good place yourself, unless you have a love affair with yourself, unless you're tapped in to that divinity inside of you. So that's why I created it. I mean, the second book is about relationships and marriage and divine love. And the third book is about parenting, but it's still flying solo. You still, no matter where you are, you know, there you are, no matter where you go, you know, the only person we're guaranteed to be with for the rest of our lives is ourselves. So we better get good in our skin.
Well, and we are the only common denominator in our lives, aren't we? When everything goes wrong, what's the common denominator? When everything goes right, what's the common denominator?
I've had clients tell me, you know, I moved, I changed my job, and I've done this, and I've been in this relationship, and I'm still not happy. And I'm like, so what's the one thing you keep taking with you? You. You're not happy because you are not good. You need to get good on your own. So,
well, And I found I was, we were leading a group through France over the last couple of weeks, several groups, and I found myself talking about your work over and over again as I was encountering people who had been through various relationship circumstances. And it wasn't just divorce. I think the processes that are in this book, I actually recommended this book to a number of people over the last couple of weeks, several of whom were widowed, several of whom had been alone for a very long time, because these processes are good for everybody. I mean, they're specifically amazing for people who are going through a divorce process. But this idea of learning to love yourself in order to be truly happy, and how to work through your stuff so that you are happy being the common denominator your life, is something that I think applies to everybody. So I also want to say to people who are listening to this, you know, don't walk away from the book with divorce and the title just because it might not apply to you, the divorce piece of it. The practices, the spiritual practices in this book are so powerful that they really apply to everybody.
I actually had a woman send me a Facebook message about a week and a half ago, and she said she read my saved her marriage. I was blown away, but the principle that stuck out was that she was pointing the finger of blame, happiness, and dissatisfaction in her marriage on her husband, and she hadn't taken any personal responsibility. And that's a big, you know, a big theme that runs through this book, is that you are the author of your life, so you need to be you know, even in relationship, you need to be actively creating and writing that story. You cannot just sit there and expect somebody else to make your life great. So that was really exciting.
It must have been very exciting for you to hear from someone saying, you know, this isn't helping me in a divorce process. This actually helped me to save my marriage because I was proactive enough and caught this soon enough to be able to work on it. I mean, that's an amazing thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's no telling if I like to marriage the sacred garden. You know, it's where, you know, the beloveds meet. And so both people have to be willing to till the soil and work there. So as much as one person might want it, if both people aren't invested in creating something beautiful, it's not going to happen. But I thought it was really hopeful to hear her take her responsibility, because when you take back your responsibility, then you're at power to make the changes you need to in your life. You know, when somebody's always failing, it's always somebody else's fault. You're constantly a victim, you know, so you're powerless.
Well, and I think this is where we come to the whole idea of the story, because, you know, I know that when I talk to people about this concept of spiritual divorce, I often get, yeah, but you don't know what happened to me in my divorce. You don't know what he did to me or what she did to me, because everybody has a story. So this is one of the pieces that I think is so powerful in your work. Will you talk about this whole idea of your story and why we need to lose the story?
Yeah, actually, it's the first, you know, principle that I work with my clients and my groups. It's lose the story and learn the lesson. And I think both you and Philip can kind of appreciate the maligned person in history. You know, I often think of history as his story, and it's always the story of the winner. But, you know, people love to revise their story based on their perception. So if they're in pain and they feel wounded, they want to make somebody bad, they to make themselves feel right. And you hear that a lot in the divorce story. I didn't see it coming. They cheated on me. You don't have any idea. I was left without money. I was, you know, and there are people act pretty badly at the end of a marriage when you're going through divorce. You said it, Kathleen. It's very destructive, but it doesn't have to be that way. If people can step back and look at the entire life of the marriage, see where they compromised their values, maybe their principles, where they gave up things that were really important to them, where they started the little untruths, even to themselves, where they started not being true to who they were, maybe to their spiritual practice, to the things that made them feel alive. And then they can learn the lessons within the entire marriage. And it's not like, well, at the end, it just went bad. And so that's my whole story. But that's very hard, because people love to meet each other with chocolate chips and milk, you know, chocolate chip cookies and milk, and go, yeah, I know, I feel really bad for you. You know, they really, we kind of feed on that negativity. And when you do that, it's actually so different, you know, so separate from when you want to create light and love and really make an amazing change in your life. You can't stay in mud and expect, you know, to feel great about yourself. So the first thing we talk about is losing your story in this principle. But I will say, losing your story, you have to take an honest look at the story first. You have to take an honest look. You can't just see it from your perspective. You have to see the side of your ex-spouse. I mean, perhaps they left you for somebody else. People become so afraid that that makes them unlovable. You know, that's a big, you know, well, that person's bad. They left me for this man or this woman. Instead of, why did they leave? What wasn't working here? Why weren't we showing up? Why were we trying to make okay perfect? And what's next for me? When you can let go of your story, you can move into your future. So it's a very, very powerful principle, but I get a lot of flack for that one.
Oh, I'm sure you do, because people don't want to let go of their stories. Their story defines them. But I suffered. I suffered, and someone has to hear about it, and you need to know. And yeah, you might have had a bad divorce, but gosh, mine was so much worse. You have no idea what I went through. People are so committed to that pain and that past and that story that they've been through. And so how do you get them through that? How when you have someone When you do these seminars and you are working with people in these groups and you get someone like that, because I know you've had them, who does not want to let go of the story and is so determined to make you see how much they're hurting. How do you work with them through that? What's the process that you begin to get them to start looking at it another way?
Well, first of all, I suggest to them that they can't tell their story to more than two people. And they have to pick two people that will encourage them to tell the truth and tell the whole story, but they can't discuss it. Because when you stop discussing it, it's almost like when you stop putting your junk on everybody, it has to stay inside of you. So then you're really forced to deal with it. It's almost like you're going to explode. Like, so you really have to, you have to deal with whatever pain you're in. So that is one of the things that, you know, I suggest initially right off the bat, is that you're not permitted to tell your story. But you're right. A lot of people go, yeah, but my story is really great. And yeah, I do assure them that my story is better than theirs. I just don't need to tell it anymore. Because it is. you know, so a lot of times people will look at me and they'll think, what do you know? What do you know? You're married, you're successful. You don't know what it is to be in that pain. And I assure them that I do, because I do know what it is to be there. But I also, you know, we also discuss this idea that nobody gets a pain-free pass in this life. You know, we're going through, you know, you're going through something really difficult, but what I want to inspire and awaken in people is faith in themselves, that they can get through this experience, that they don't have to stay there. You know, I talk a lot about how they don't get to transcend their divorce experience. They have to walk through the situation. They have to be present in the pain and learn the lesson. So we go back to the lose the story and learn the lesson through the other principles. So we start talking about really what is it you're feeling. Maybe it's your fragile ego. Like, why are you telling this story? Tell me how it makes you feel. How is it serving you when you tell this story? You know, do you have to make somebody wrong in order for you to be right? Because a lot of people do that. I mean, look at politics. You know, we have to make one person bad in order to make one person good, instead of stepping back and saying, you know what, there's a lot of different ways to see it, and I'm going to live my life according to my perspective, and I'm going to let that person live their life according to theirs. So, you know, we obviously we have a lot of conversation, and I give my my groups, even in my workbook, and it's a workbook. It takes work. I always tell people, you know, if you look at opportunity, it's in overalls. It's work. I have people write their divorce story. So I usually have them actually write the whole thing out when they first met their partner. So they get to really be in their story. You know, they get to really have their moment in the sun. They get to really tell their story to themselves. And then we discuss how that story is honest and authentic and how it's not. Like, how is it serving them right now? You know, are they the victim? Are they the villain? Is there shame or is there blame attached to the role they're playing? Because I have clients too that are filled with shame because they did the leaving. And because they did the leaving, they're usually the villain. You know, so it's, you know, it's about dealing with both sides of that. And then we talk about getting in touch with your body. I think our bodies are amazing tools. I mean, I'm sure you guys have talked to psychics, that idea of intuition, trusting your senses, knowing, you know, knowing the truth. So when people tell their story, I ask them as they're telling it, so tell me how you feel. Do you feel filled with joy? Are you really excited? Are you super happy? Do you feel on fire and passionate? Or do you feel depleted? Do you feel exhausted? And usually people don't feel so good when they're telling it. They feel full of anger or fear. And it's generally fear. It's fear, you know. So those are some of the steps that we use to begin to lose the story and learn the lesson. And we go back to that principle through all of the work that I do. It comes up again and again and again, because people do love their stories. But I suggest that there's another story out there for them, right? I mean, that is a chapter in their story, but it is not their whole story. So start writing a new one.
and start writing one with a really, really happy ending, because that's what you did. And that's one of the things I think that makes you such a powerful teacher of this material. And I have had the pleasure of seeing you in action. I have been to your wellness center in New Jersey. I have watched you in front of groups of people. And I know how spectacularly well you handle these groups and these people. And the reason that you can is because you truly do walk your walk. And I want to say that, because there are a lot of people out there in the general new age coaching world right now who are teaching things that they know nothing about, you know, who are talking about divorce, who have never been through a divorce, you know, and for me, there's the credibility issues come into play when someone hasn't been through it. When I watch you teach this material and take people through it and really get them through it, what I see is someone who is totally authentic, because you have lived this. You have been through the story. You have been through the big story with, you know, knights and kings and queens and the damsel in distress and the wicked king who, you know, all of these things. You have a great story, and you moved through that story and you wrote a new story for yourself with an incredibly happy ending. And you are standing in front of this saying, you know, this works because I am a living example of it. And that is what's so powerful. You are a living example of it. You have remarried a magnificent man. You have an amazing relationship. You're a joy to watch together. You are demonstrating and modeling something for the world that is all about real love, and compassion and sharing. And it's a beloved relationship. And so I think that gives you the authority to stand up and say, this works, and let me model it for you. And so I really wanted to point that out, because that kind of authenticity in this world of New Age teaching is not as common as it should be, but you absolutely have it. And then from there, I want to go into this idea of how your spirituality came into play here, how it helped you, how it was enhanced, and where you use it in the process. Because one of the things that I love in this book is the prayers. You have incorporated prayer into this process in a way that is just, it's so universal and it's so beautiful. And for example, I love early in the book, you have, "Dear Lord, I bless and release my ex-spouse into your care." And then the prayer goes on. But it's really, there's these really wonderful, simple, but so inspired elements of, you know, connecting to spirit and praying that I think really help in this process. So I wanted to know how you got to that, where these prayers came from, and how you feel it works into this process for everybody.
I don't feel that I could even get through my day without prayer. I feel that that is the one relationship that we're guaranteed, is our relationship with, I like to say, God. I tell people, you can say whatever you want, great mother, universe, spirit, but I believe in a higher power. And my faith is obviously very alternative, but it's very deep. It runs deep. And it's the one relationship that never fails me. I mean, I feel, you know, when I tap in and I tune out, I gain clarity, and I feel peaceful. I feel like I'm able to handle all of the junk that might come my way. But I became, you know, I was always a very faith-filled little girl. I've had a very deep spiritual connection my whole life. I've had visions and all of those things. But I walked away from that when I got married. My ex-husband thought that that was kind of crazy. And when you talk about a value compromise, I went, yeah, maybe he's right. Maybe I need to focus on the things of this world, you know, having my children, getting a successful business off the ground. And I'll take my little altar and I'll put it in the basement in the corner. I did. Literally, so I'd go down there every once in a while when I was feeling really empty and hollow inside. But I was going through my divorce and I moved out and I moved into this tiny little cottage. It there was a gorgeous garden. I had created it. And I started going out there and just started talking to God again. And I started hearing him. I started feeling so connected that I never felt alone. And I think that's been the most helpful thing for me. And the thing that I tell all of my clients is, you are never alone. First of all, we're all interconnected. So nothing is really taken away from you. I mean, we're all part of the one. And we always have the ability to tap into pure love at any moment through active prayer. And the prayers just come to me because I babble all the time to God.
He's probably like, really, really?
Can you not call me up today? I like to call it my morning meeting with God. I usually start my morning with God and I say, all right, it's my will to do your will. I've got no idea what that is, but it's worked out much better for me when I've surrendered my silly little plans and I've allowed the plan of the divine to flow through me. And I can speak to that for this year. The business opportunities and the opportunities that are coming to me are like nothing I would ever have imagined for myself. So I see that it works. It absolutely works.
Well, and another one of the prayers that I just wanted to mention that I loved in this process, because, of course, being able to say, I bless and release my spouse and my ex-spouse into your care is critical. But there's another one here that I thought was really beautiful, and that was the one where it says, my heart, it aches, and at times I'm unsure why. And I consciously bless and release my ex-spouse, but I need strength to honor my own grief and loss now that my marriage is over. And I thought, and that prayer actually goes on. It's really beautiful. And I love that it says, okay, I'm in. Amen, I'm in, as you say, which I love. But it's, I love that it has this essence of, I am doing this. I am working through this. I really do bless and release my ex-spouse, but I still have work to do on myself. I still need to honor that I am grieving and that I'm in this place of loss and pain. And so there are elements of these prayers that I actually just really, really connected to and thought that they were extremely beautiful. And I think that, again, they're prayers that can be used for lots of different situations. So, people can use this book to help them get through a very trying and difficult time. But I think that they can take and carry these lessons from the book and carry the prayer and carry the practices into all aspects of their lives forever after. And I think that's very exciting.
Me too. And, because we all go through transitions through life. I mean, right? The one thing we're guaranteed is change. I mean, life is always changing. And we transition into new relationships. We transition from old, from jobs. Our children grow and we transition into another phase of our lives. And a lot of us hold on. Again, it goes back to that story. We hold on to that reality so tightly that we don't open up to the possibilities that are before us. We're so invested in what was instead of what could be. So I believe that a lot of the principles, like I said, as I teach this work, I'm always amazed at there's always something I need to be working on because I'm always working through something. I mean, life's always changing and throwing me challenges. So am I going to forgive? Am I in touch with how I'm feeling? Am I angry? Am I afraid? Sometimes I forget to have gratitude. Because I'm just having a really bad day and I'm pissed off. And so, sometimes I need to back off and go, okay, Beth, you need to cut it out, tap in, tune out, and, find some gratitude for what you have right in this moment. So that's, that's really exciting for me also, not as only the author, but the facilitator, because I've seen people go through the program, go through the process, and then come back because now their daughter is getting married and they are realizing that grief still comes back, that pain is still there. So they have to kind of work through something. Even people that have been remarried, they're dealing with ex-spouses and new children. And so there's always something to apply it to.
Now, when it comes to divorce, is there a difference between men and women and how they cope with it? And is your process different if it is? Or kind of like, how do you see this gender balance between coping with divorce and rising from your ashes towards your true self afterwards?
I have a lot of clients that are both men and women, and they handle the work very differently. What I find is the men will jump right into the work. Because I'm giving them a workbook and they have questions. And so they feel like, okay, I've got something to focus on and do here, and I'm going to do the work. They're less apt to tell their story, but they have a harder time dealing sometimes with the emotions, like defining what they're really feeling. So although it's different, and I find that, you know, each gender has to focus a little bit on different things, because like we as women, we love to tell our stories. So that's where women sometimes will get really stuck, where men oftentimes will get stuck, like I said, in figuring out what they're really feeling instead of running into just another relationship. Really, what I love is when I see men really work on their own value, that they have value not because they bring something to the relationship monetarily, or you know, that they're not the knight in shining armor, but just because they are, just simply because they are a child of God, that they have value. That's really exciting work. And that's part of what we work on in my groups and through this workbook.
I mean, to some extent, what's wrong and what you're trying to address are things which only seem to rise to the surface when people go through divorce. But they like loving thyself, knowing why you're here, you know, feeling appreciated, having a relationship with God, all of these things you would expect to be there to a large extent or to some extent from childhood onwards. You would expect this to be part of our education or our spiritual education system, not just in America but across the world. But it seems not to be, and it almost seems to me as if people are experiencing divorce because it's lacking somehow. It's almost as if first marriage is being thrown away because we are not ready to be married. Is that an overstatement, or is that somehow something which is real in a kind of weird sense?
It's absolutely real. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we don't teach our children how to love themselves, how to tap into the divine. So many people, when people discuss why they got married, it's for all the things outside of themselves. Oh, we had children. We had a beautiful home. You know, we created a career. I mean, we were in love, but it seems the love, the tending of that beloved garden is not, we're not even taught what that relationship should be like or be for. I mean, there's no conversation in your 20s. Listen, this relationship should enhance your life, but it doesn't give you a life. And it's where you stretch and you're safe to grow and where your spirit should, you know, be pulled and, you know, expand. We're like, get married so that you guys can have children, and then you're going to have a house and you'll have a career and you guys will make friends with kids, other children's parents. It's so outside of what's inside of us. So I think you really hit the nail on the head. We have to love ourselves. We have to feel tapped in and connected to source and really know who we are and what we value before we enter into a relationship. And I'm seeing so many marriages over 25 years that are, it's an increase for sure in my work, that I've seen a lot of men and women hitting their mid 40s and 50s, their children are gone, and they have nothing in common. They haven't tended that relationship. That relationship was just supposed to mysteriously sustain itself. And, you know, and now they don't even know who they are. They don't know who they are. They don't really like who the other person is. And, and then they decide it's over. But what I see so often is, instead of then taking this time to fall in love with yourself, with God, with this world, people are so worried they're never going to have love again. They run into another relationship. And second marriages, 63% of them fail. And I think that's an outrageously high number. I was really surprised by that. But not as much since I started traveling and teaching this work in other places, because people are running into another relationship. They're not walking, knowing who they are and what they value. And, you know, they're rushing. You're like a train wreck.
It's an interesting situation where we're in right now, which is that, first of all, do we feel that we are addressing a situation because there is a divorce? And is this something which somehow we are better at doing rather than just go back to our 20s, so to speak, and put in an education system whereby these basic steps are thought before we are actually getting married and doing all of these things. But also, we seem to live in a world, specifically in the Western world, where we say it's all about us, it's all about the individual. We, you know, we can live the American dream. You can go from zero to a hero if you know this and do that. There seems to be an awful lot of place for individuality. And is that real or is it just make-believe? Is so much of this really just a layer of veneer? And is it masking to a large extent the fact that we really have no idea who we are? We really have no idea how to define ourselves. And I also think, you know, that borderline between knowing who you are and being an egomaniac or involved with the ego rather than with who you are.
I actually think, you know, that's a brilliant statement because I quote spiritual selfishness, you know, no, I have to do this because it's good for me. That's not at all what I'm talking about. And I think that's what you're speaking to, Philip. I think people stay in relationships because of their big fat egos. You know, no way, you can't leave me. You know, that it's all about me. We enter into relationships because of our egos, but because of fear. Because do we really know ourselves? Because if we did, we'd also know that we're all interconnected. We're never alone. And being good in our own skin doesn't mean being self-righteous or selfish. It means you now become a steward to other people. I love to call it leading with a servant's heart. You know, I look at my work as I'm not a leader. I'm a friend and I'm a servant. I'm there to serve my clients because I understand the pain they've been through, but I'm also there to give them a hand and say, now it's time to dust yourself off, get to your feet, and let's get on with it. Because how can we change the world? How can we create heaven here on earth if all we're doing is focusing inward on our pain and we're staying stuck? So there's a lot of layers to it. And for me, service is a huge component because divorce and separation can become a very inward, very about me, about my pain, about my process, about my kids. And it's because it's scary. You know, people don't know monetarily what they're going to do. They don't know what's going to happen with their children. So I understand that, but that's a very different focus than really focusing on falling in love with yourself for the almost the privilege that we're all here, you know, that we're all these amazing divine beings having this experience together. So.
Go ahead, honey.
Oh, sorry. Hold on. Mark that place. Well, I think for me, the next really major point in your book and in this work and possibly in life is the big piece here, and that is forgiveness. And I think that forgiveness is the most difficult piece of this all the way around. Yes, we can let go of the story. Yes, we can pray. Yes, we can say we're moving on. But are we really? And we really aren't until we forgive. And I love that in the book you have the quote from Gandhi that says, "The weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is an attribute of the strong." And I do think that you have to reach a point of building that strength before you are in a place of truly being able to forgive. And to credit your book, you don't put forgiveness at the beginning. You know, forgiveness can't come at the beginning because you have to do a lot of work before you can forgive. So I think that, you know, the way that you have it in the book, where it comes after you've done that work and established your relationship with God and worked on the story, then you finally are in the place of forgiveness. So I wanted to talk to you about that. What has been your experience in doing this work with other people in terms of the forgiveness piece? Is this the hardest thing for people? And how do you get people to work through it? Because the other thing about forgiveness is it's easy to give lip service to it. It's easy to say, oh, I can. I'm going to forgive them and this is all going to be okay. But getting to that point of really feeling it, that's where it is transformational. You know, that's where it really, really changes you and your life is when you are able to really, really mean it. So how do you get people, help people to get to that place of really meaning it?
Well, you know, I like you you know, you did mention it takes time. And forgiveness, again, it's an exercise. It's a practice. And I think we as in humanity are very out of practice with true forgiveness. I mean, with real forgiveness, we're pretty cheap with it, honestly, I think. I mean, we're willing to forgive somebody that we love because we love them. So we have an investment. It's actually our egos. We have an investment in forgiving them. But how do you forgive somebody that has really hurt you? And I think part of one of the tricks to that is trusting that God has a plan for all of us. You know, that there is a divine plan that we don't understand. I read a wonderful book. I don't know if you two are familiar with The Shack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and whether or not you like the book, what it really spoke to is that idea of forgiving, not because you're setting that person free, but because forgiveness sets you free. When you're able to forgive, it's like you are getting up from guarding the empty jail cell. Because, you know, your spouse is out doing their own thing too, right? So your ex-spouse, you don't even know what they're doing. We have all these imaginary things, you know, this person's thriving and you're in a god darn divorce support group suffering, you know. So we build, we have all these gremlins in our mind. And I'm like, forgiving is the idea of letting the gremlins go. You know, let those thoughts go and trust that there is a better plan. One of my prayers that I start with my groups, and it's in this book, is I pray for the best outcome for everyone. And it's pretty funny in groups because you can see people like raise their eyebrow, like, I don't want to pray for the best outcome for him or her.
Yeah.
They look at me and I'm like, but if it's the best outcome for everybody, it's the best outcome for you.
Right, of course.
It's that idea of trusting that there's more for you. But I think unless you have this relationship with spirit, it must be very hard to forgive because you don't, you know, you don't trust that there's a better plan for you or that the next chapter in your life is going to be even better. So a few of the exercises is I challenge my clients to pray for somebody that they really have a hard time for, because prayer is an act of forgiveness and it's an act of service. And I think you probably agree with me there. So praying for somebody, even if it's gritting your teeth, it's like exercising. Just practice. Fake it until you make it. I bless and release this person with, you know?
Well, it's true. And actually, the thing that I also wanted to mention here is, for me, this act of gritting your teeth and working through the forgiveness process was not about my ex-spouse. You know, working through my issues with my ex-spouse was actually easier than some of the collateral damage. And by collateral damage, I mean those friends who take sides during the divorce. You know, I found that incredibly destructive. You know, people who you trusted and then they turn on you, or they take his side and they take sides, and there's all this stuff. And, you know, that is the collateral stuff in divorce that I think really requires the forgiveness practice. It's not just your relationship with that person who you are divorcing. It's your relationship with all these other people in your life and how that impacts you. And I think that at times those relationships are actually more toxic to your process than your relationship with your ex-spouse. Do you agree with that?
Oh my God. Absolutely. I mean, I think for most people, you're not just losing a spouse, and you can feel so betrayed and so hurt and so isolated from people that you thought you could trust. You know, I think trust is a big thing. We oftentimes, after separation and divorce, we don't know who to trust anymore. You know, we don't know what to trust. And working through the forgiveness of other people, but I think we again become very invested in holding on to relationships that no longer serve us. So letting them go is part of the forgiveness practice. But, you know, I have people holding on tooth and nail to, you know, to the bucket that goes down to the dry well. And I'm like, there is a well over here with water. Why are you over there? You know,
right,
because
right.
This is where I've always gone for water. Well, there's no more water there. So come on over to this side. But, you know, again, they have to let go of the bucket. And that's the forgiveness part. You know, when you forgive, you set yourself free. And it, I think it's very hard because we're creatures of habit. We don't want anything to change, even if it's bad for us. You know?
Yeah, and one of the questions that you ask in the forgiveness piece is, do you try to convince other people to side with you against others? And I think that everyone does that early in the divorce process. I think there's a lot of that kind of scrambling. There's a lot of that, be on my side. Know that I, you know, because I'm going to tell my story and I was the victim and, you know, he was the perpetrator. So you need to come and be on my side. And then when they aren't on your side, then you feel betrayed. And that's happening on both sides, right? It's happening, you know, sort of all the way around. And so I think that that is, for me, was really, a huge piece of what I responded to in your book was, you know, sometimes it's just the process of asking yourself these basic questions, like, do you try to convince people to side with you? I'm like, oh, yeah, I do. You know, yeah, I do. And is that wrong? You know, you know, it's these really basic questions that you ask yourself that really make you pull yourself up and go, oh crap, I'm doing that. Yeah. You know, and what's another thing that I love about this book is that, you know, the way that you've written it, the format of it, you know, sometimes you'll have a question like that that just kind of centered in one part of the page, and it makes you just stop and ask that question, and it's extremely effective. And that was one of the questions that hit me right between the eyes, you know. Now, if I can ever find the strength to utterly forgive my divorce lawyer, then I will have mastered this. But I haven't gotten quite that far yet.
Well, it's a process, remember.
So, yeah, one of your processes in the forgiveness is write a list of people with whom you still hold grievances. And I think my divorce lawyer is all 10 of the first 10 people. So
yeah,
I'm not the only one who feels that way.
I've even said that, you know, it's so many in the divorce that you can feel so betrayed by and hurt by. People even have to work on forgiving their children. You know, it's very hard. Sometimes people feel very betrayed by a child because they still love and adore your ex-spouse. Perhaps they don't, you know, want to be with you as much as they want to be with your ex-spouse. And so I think it, again, comes back to our very fragile sense of self, too. You know, when we try and get people on our side, I think ultimately it's because we want to feel lovable. You know, we want to feel like people are on our side, they're with us because we're right, because we're lovable. They're not as lovable as us. So again, it always returns to how good are you in your own skin? I call that spell casting. You know, when you walk into a group and you can say, oh, so-and-so, they're coming, you know, they're really miserable, they do this and do that, and they're so condescending, and they're X, Y, and Z. And sure enough, you've been able to take a whole room of people, and they've already developed an opinion about somebody that they don't know. You know, it's so unfair, really, but we do it all the time. And again, it's not very spiritual, so why do we do it? And I think it comes back to we're afraid. We want to be lovable. We make people wrong so that we can feel right. We bring people down so that we can be lifted. And I believe that the big secret is we don't have to do that. We merely need to tap in to God. We merely need to tap into Source because there's enough of that there. We can get that fuel that we need for ourselves. We don't need to get it from somebody else.
Well, and one of the things that you talk about is this idea of values. And you actually mentioned a little while ago when you said that when you got married the first time, you changed your values for your ex-husband. You put your altar in the basement. You changed yourself and the things that you valued and your perspective on who you are in this world and what your mission is because – you know, being in that relationship caused you to do that or influenced you to do that. And I think that this is a really, really important core issue for all people in relationships. I think that, you know, for me, if someone feels like they have to change their core values, and I see it, you know, you see it too with women especially, but I think men do it as well. But I think women are more likely to change who they are because they want to make a relationship work. And I think that this is the ultimate red flag in any relationship. You know, if you are in a relationship where you feel you have to change your core values in order to make the relationship work, you need to be paying very close attention to that because I think that that's really dangerous. And so one of the things I love about this book is you talk about what are your core values and how did you change them in your last relationship, and what will you not change going forward? And I wanted to talk a little bit about how you came to that, because I think that ultimately what makes a relationship work long term is when you share core values.
You have to share core values. When you're vilifying somebody and you feel like a victim, I urge people to step back and go, what did you compromise? You created a sacred contract when you initially went into that relationship and you made compromises right then and there. And it comes down to the smallest thing, allowing somebody to be late when you value being on time. You know, when somebody doesn't keep their word and you continue to be in relationship without saying this is a compromise and I can't compromise this, it either changes or I bless and release you with love, but you can't be in my life. We don't do that in relationships. I feel like we always take this okay, and we're so desperate to be in relationships that we try to make them perfect. I think you're right, Kathleen. Women do it more, and then we become irritated. Like, you know, or women get with men and they go, I'm going to change him. Well, if you already want to change him, why are you with him? I don't like the way he dresses. Well, then why are you there? Like, so I think it's very important to know what you value and also know who you are and who that person is realistically. Like, people start to date somebody and they go, yeah, I like them, but this, but that, but this, but we might be able to get married. Maybe they want to be with me forever. So it doesn't matter. I'm just going to take it any way I can get it. And then we're shocked when it doesn't work out. Right. I will say I would never have met my husband 15 years ago because I didn't know what I valued. I wouldn't have even seen him. I wouldn't have even seen it.
Well, you know, I wish I had found your book earlier in my divorce process because I think it really would have helped me. But even reading it after the fact has been incredibly valuable for me. Like I said, sometimes, you know, I go through it and something will still hit me right between the eyes and I go, oh God, I haven't finished this yet. I haven't completed this process. You know, I still haven't forgiven everyone I need to forgive and I still haven't let go. And I'm much, much better about the story now. I tell people the story doesn't matter. You know, I have moved on and I bless the experience and I bless the experience of my marriage of 22 years. It was, you know, beautiful things came out of that. And you know, my beautiful children came out of it and I had amazing experiences. But most of all, I think ultimately it brings you to where you are today. You are who you are because you had those experiences. And I don't think you should ever regret that. And I think being able to embrace everything that you've done in your life, from the good, the bad, the mistakes, everything, to realizing that it brought you to where you are is really, really necessary. And I think, you know, I want to say this for people who are not on the other side of it yet, for people who are either immersed in a divorce or on the verge of one, and who are scared and who are in pain and who are angry. Here's what I want to say. In the same way that I can look at you, Beth, and see you stand there as a shining example of how this process works, as someone who is in such an inspirational second marriage, you know, I can also say that I like to think that I'm in that place too. You know, after I came through a very difficult divorce and found the love of my life on the other side of it. And I am now in the beginnings of my second marriage to Philip and this extraordinary, incredible, amazing relationship that we have. And you know what? I would not have ever had this relationship with him if I had not been through what I have been through. I come to him from a very different place than I did in my first marriage because I learned all of those lessons and I went through all of those experiences. And it was absolutely necessary for me to get to this place where I can now be in this amazing relationship with Philip in a completely different way. And, you know, that's one of the things that is really exciting about this is to say to people, you know what, this is the real payoff of letting go of the story and keeping the lesson is that there really is gold at the end of that rainbow. You know, there are beautiful things waiting for you once you get through it. And if you can look at this process of divorce as a stepping stone towards getting you to a new place in your life, because now you have learned all these lessons and you are in a different space to meet somebody, and to meet somebody because you are coming from a completely different place, a place that's not needy, and a place that is about who I am and my core values. You know, like attracts like. These are the laws of physics, right? So if you are coming from a place where you are angry and needy and immersed in the story, what are you going to attract? You're going to attract that same kind of energy to you. And that's a downward spiral. But when you can move through it all and focus on what are my core values? What is my relationship with God? What am I here to do? And immerse yourself in that. That is when you are truly flying solo, from my point of view. And I think that's certainly what happened in my life. When I was able to stand up and say, you know what, I am going to commit myself to my core values and my mission in life, and that is what I'm going to do, that's when I met Philip, because I attracted to me what I was doing. And it's a relationship that is beyond anything I ever could have imagined. But I could not have done it had I not been through the pain of the difficult aspects of my marriage and the divorce process. To your point, nobody gets a pain-free pass, and nobody should, because it is going through those things that really brings you to the ultimate place of understanding. It's that crucible in which we you know, our ego is melted and we become something else. But I wanted to talk to you about that, about this idea of giving people hope. And also, particularly for my sisters out there, women, because you have been through a difficult or a bad relationship with a man doesn't mean that all men are bad. And this is the other thing. I hear it all the time, even on my, you know, we were on a group with a lot of women recently, and I was sitting at the table, and every single one of them had been through a really bad divorce. We're all really angry. And all I heard through this whole process, and we were in this beautiful garden in France, and all I could hear was, oh, well, men are this and men are that. And these women were so angry. And you know, all I could think of is, as long as you come from this point of view that all men are bad, what are you ever going to attract in your life? And so I wanted to know, you know, how do you feel about that? How do you deal with women specifically who are coming from that point of view of, I will never trust a man again because all men are like this?
It's a great point. And what I hear again and again is this yearning for connection, for another relationship, which is interesting because it's kind of a dichotomy. I get a lot of people who tell me they know exactly what they don't want in their next relationship. And I'm like, well, that's exactly what you're going to get, because that's what you're focusing on. And that's what, you know, you just so eloquently stated. I think when you, again, take personal responsibility for your experience in your relationship, then you don't have to hate. You don't have to be so invested in hating your ex-spouse. But the gender bashing, how can we bring balance? I mean, there's a lot, you know, I work with a lot of groups and a lot of goddess groups, but it's time that we bring balance back. It's time that there, you know, that we honor, you know, if we want to be goddesses, then we have to expect and trust that there are men out there who can be gods in our lives. But again, it speaks to, we have to know what we value. We have to be actively pursuing our purpose and living our ministry and doing our life's work and not looking for somebody to give us a life. And then if that's part of your plan, the person, you know, that you're supposed to be with will come to you. I have a lot of people who say, I want somebody who's trustworthy, or I want somebody who's this, and I want that, you know, a person who's this. And my suggestion is always be that person then. If you want somebody who's trustworthy, become impeccable with your word. You know, if you want somebody who's financially responsible, then you better be financially responsible. And it speaks to what you just said, Kathleen. I think like attracts like. When I think of my husband and the life that we have now and the work that we do, I would never have even recognized him because I didn't know who I was. I wasn't living my life. I was willing to compromise it all for anybody, for any relationship. And that's another thing too. We're always trying to make okay perfect instead of allowing that beautiful relationship to come to us by having a relationship with ourselves.
our amazing and inspirational spirit revolutionary guest today has been Beth Tiger. Her extraordinary book, which I recommend to everyone who's listening, is Rising from the Ashes of Divorce, part of the Flying Solo series. Beth, if people want to get more information about you, about your extraordinary speaking engagements, your seminars that you create, and most of all, how to buy this book today, where's the best place they can find you?
They can log on www.bethtiger.com, or they can even meet me on Facebook, Beth Tiger.
And for anybody who wants to listen to this show or to any of our previous show, there are a number of ways of doing this. You can go to iTunes, where you can download. You can go to the BBS Radio Archives, where you can listen to all of our shows for a small fee. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/spiritrevolution, or to our very own website, which is thespiritrevolution.com. Until next week, from the both of us,
the truth against the world.